greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the propaganda wars when we come back. You know, when people call the law school, they oftentimes ask me how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Well, keep in mind that most of these topics that you hear on the radio, I teach in detail in one of my classes here at the law school. For example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was Alfred the Great who codified the common law in 872 AD into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 of those statutes have been incorporated into our federal constitution and into our Bill of Rights. Now, this common law was taken from the law of Moses, the Mosaic law given to Moses out at Mount Sinai. It's recorded in the Bible in Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24, verse 8, and it includes negligence, insurance, taxes. No taxes such as income and property and social security taxes. Now, these IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of the biblical tithing laws of Scripture, and they work a theft on everybody that participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and social security, and that's the basis of our tax and status school. Now, we owe this income tax and social security tax because we've contracted into it. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write for our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's an educational, informative, and entertaining way to do it. Best of all, it's free. And you can just call us and ask for one. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website and you can send us an email. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email when you get there, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send us a request. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the propaganda war. So last time I brought in religion. Religion is a very important part of the overall deception of mankind on planet Earth. In fact, it's indispensable. Without religion, the deception that we see going on around the world would be impossible. So it was necessary to bring religion under the control of the government. And here in the United States, we did it through money. As Dan Rather used to say, you know, follow the money. So the way government got control of religion in this country was to offer a tax rebate, a tax incentive. And it's called 501c3 tax exemption. And so the government comes along and says, well, we want to be the friend of religion. We don't want to separate the church and state. We want to create an environment that encourages religion and encourages people to support religion. So we're going to give you tax exemption. And what that means is that you can donate up to 30% of what you make to your church or religious organization and then take it off your income tax. So you don't have to spend your after-tax income, what's left over, you know, after you've paid taxes on it to support your local church. You can do it before taxes. And so the churches, they jumped right on that. Now, there's a caveat that goes with it. If you take this 501c3 tax exemption, then you can't criticize the government. You can't speak out on political topics. So the Revolutionary War was spearheaded by the religious leaders of the country. Today, if the religious leader says something that it violates public policy, they'll lose their tax exemption. And no church wants to lose its tax exemption, you know. Once you get used to it, well, you want to keep that. So, to give you an illustration, in the Bible, there is a subject called sodomy. And it is strictly prohibited by God in the Bible. Now, everybody knows that. Every church leader knows that. There isn't anybody that doesn't know what the Bible says about sodomy. You don't have to be real smart to figure this out. Now, the public policy of the United States is to permit sodomy. That's the secular government. In fact, they promote it. Now, how do we rein in the churches from criticizing it or teaching people about it? And the way you do that is you threaten to take away their 501c3 if they were to criticize the sodomy policy of the United States. Well, then they're going to lose their tax exemption. Same thing true with segregation and integration. All of the topics that are destructive of society are effectively controlled then by the central government. So the central government controls religion and its thought and its policies. And they do it through tax exemption. Now, it's part and parcel with the governments around the world to control their churches, to control their religion. Some states, some governments, like Great Britain, they have a church-state religion. It's the Episcopal Church. In Catholic countries around the world, it's the Roman Catholic Church. And the Roman Catholic Church, teamed up with the governments of these countries, effectively control the political and the religious thought of the people that live in those countries. That's the way they control them. And after all, this whole process is one of control. Now, human beings are unlike animals. Human beings have a brain. They have a thought process given to us by our Creator so that we can make choices. So the objective of governments is to get you to stop making those choices. And so there's a number of tools that we use, and this is a psychological war. These are psychops, as they call them. And the power of suggestion, for instance, is a very, very powerful tool. Let me give you an illustration about how this power of suggestion works. Every year at Christmas time, we hear these words. Jesus Christ is the King of Peace. Peace. Peace on earth and goodwill toward men. Now, remember I reported to you an incident where a couple of court reporters with my wife happened to see an event in a courthouse up in Wright County, Webster County, in which they saw a very traumatic scene of a prisoner being beaten. Now, there was a real beating going on. I mean, I'm not discounting the fact that there was that this was phony. No, it was a real beating going on. But my wife suggested, here's the power of suggestion, when this event was unveiled in front of the eyes of these two witnesses, she said, "Oh my God, look at the blood." Now, there wasn't any blood, but the power of suggestion is so powerful that when the two ladies heard, "Oh my God, look at the blood," they both testified to that fact on the witness stand under oath. And they were disinterested witnesses. They didn't have any axe to grind. They didn't come in there and lie about there being blood everywhere because they had some ulterior motive. They, honest to God, believed there was blood. In fact, those two ladies will go to their graves believing that there was blood everywhere and wondering why nobody believed them. I had to testify when I got on the stand that there wasn't any blood, because if there would have been any blood, it would have been mine. And believe me, I wanted blood to be there. But unfortunately, there wasn't any. All right, now that's the power of suggestion. Now let me show you how this power of suggestion works. It works like a shot. So, education is a process of mind indoctrination. It's supposed to be, if we carried out education the way God intended it in the Scripture, we would present logically two stories with an alternative for you to choose which story you think makes the most sense. Which story do you think is the truth? Now, if I want you to believe something, then I don't want you to have a choice because you might choose the wrong alternative. I mean, after all, it's 50-50. So in order for me to persuade you to make you believe, to get you to accept what it is that I want you to believe, what I want to tell you, I use the power of suggestion in the educational process. I pretend that I'm educating you, but what I'm really doing is I'm indoctrinating you. Now, indoctrination uses this power of suggestion very effectively. So what we do is we suggest, we go to the Bible and we talk about peace. You know, the word peace appears in the Bible. So we take the word peace and we attach that to Jesus' birthday. And there was a statement made by an angel who said to these shepherds, you know, peace on earth and among men of goodwill. And so what we do is we lift that direct quotation from an angel talking to some people that says peace on earth. And so then we attach that to Jesus, who never said peace on earth and goodwill toward men. But we just lift it out of context and we attach that to Jesus in the birthday program called Christmas. And then we indoctrinate you with that idea. And we do that for many years. Now we come along every year and we say, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Jesus, the King of Peace. And so in our minds we believe, oh, Jesus is the King of Peace. Jesus is the guy who said, you know, he gave on the Beatitudes, you know, for instance, in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, he said, you know, if somebody slaps you on the cheek, turn to him also the other. And so this gives you the impression that this guy is a pacifist. Jesus is a pacifist. Another neat little trick we have is that Jesus has long hair. Every picture you've ever seen of Jesus, he has long hair, even though the Bible says very plainly it's a shame for a man to have long hair. All right, now, what we want to do is we want to make you believe, we want to cause you to believe that Jesus is a pacifist, Jesus has long hair, and that Jesus is the King of Peace and came to the earth to bring peace and goodwill to men. All right, now let's take a look here at a statement in the scripture. In Matthew 10, verse 34, here's a straight statement. Now listen to this. It says, think not that I have come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. All right, now first of all, that's exactly the opposite to what you believe and what you have always been told and what is deep down inside your brain, see? And so you reject that just right out of hand because you know better. You know Jesus is the King of Peace, you know he's a pacifist, and you know he has long hair. And so when you read in the scripture that it's a shame for a man to have long hair, you reject that because you already know better. And that's the power of suggestion. It isn't that you saw in the Bible or that you heard God come down and tell you, I've got long hair, I came to send peace on earth. You didn't know that. Of your own knowledge, you don't know that, but you believe that. Now, let's take this back now to 007, the airliner. You see, the lie has to be more believable than the truth. Otherwise, just your common sense would say, well, I'm going to believe this because it's the truth. No, we don't want you to believe the truth. Now, here's the truth. The truth is that the Korean airliner was a specially outfitted spy plane. That's the truth. That's the bottom line. And so the Russians who are being spied on by this spy plane, and it's not the first time that this Korean Airlines has flown an airplane up over Russian territory. And so the Americans are sitting over here saying, look, if we flew an American plane over their ground, they would suspect us of spying. But you see, the South Koreans, they're not in the Cold War. They're just a peripheral country. They're neutral. Now, if we can get the South Koreans, who are deeply in bed with the United States in trade policy, to put spy apparatus on their airplane, fly it over these sensitive Soviet installations and take pictures and give it to us, the Russians then would have no defense against it. The only solution would be to shoot the plane down, and it's full of civilians. And if they shot the plane down, my God, the outrage around the world would be so great that the Russians would never dare to shoot the plane down. just like we use the same thought process or the same strategy with the Lusitania. In 1915, the Americans and the British said, look, we want to ship munitions to Great Britain. Should we ship these munitions to Great Britain in an American ship? No, you can't. Because when the ship is in port and it's being unloaded, they can see that they're unloading munitions. And if that gets back to the Germans, then the Germans are going to say, well, the Americans aren't neutral, so we'll shoot American ships on the high seas. Besides that, it would tell all the Americans that we're clandestinely involved with the British in the war, which violates our neutrality, and Americans didn't want to get involved in the war. So President Roosevelt had this conundrum. He had to solve this problem. How are we going to do that? Okay, here's what we'll do. So they sit down with the British and they say, look, let's put it on passenger ships. Under the cover of darkness, we'll load these armaments up, and we'll put the packaging. We'll call these armaments, milling machines, or we'll call it automobiles, and we'll package them up, put it in boxes. We'll call them auto parts, and load them on these ships. Now the Germans, you know, aren't dumb people, and they've got spies and counter spies. And agents and double agents and triple agents, just like everybody else. And so, pretty soon, the Germans, they understand full well what the ruse is. And so they warned the people of America. They put ads in 5 newspapers. They're in a conundrum. If they torpedo a passenger ship, can you imagine the outrage that's going to come from that? But on the other hand, if they don't torpedo the passenger ship, then they're allowing the British to import armaments to be used against their soldiers and kill their people. All right, so the Americans now are sitting here with the British, and they're saying, well, how do we get around this? What we'll do is we'll ship this stuff on this passenger ship, but we won't tell the passengers. Will this put the passengers in harm's way? Absolutely. But we're betting that the other side won't dare to sink it. So the other side dared to sink it, and they did. And so the Russians dared to shoot the airliner down, and they did. Now, we have to have a cover story, see? So immediately after the sinking of the Lusitania, the question came up, well, was it hauling armaments? And so our president and our government jumps in and says, no, no, never, we wouldn't do such a thing. Those Germans are lying. And there's the propaganda machine. So now you and I, we're sitting out here reading the papers. President Wilson, he says, no, we're not shipping these armaments on the ship. And then here's the Germans over here saying, yes, they are. And so who are we going to believe? Well, we're going to believe our government. I mean, after all, you know, we're Americans. And we could not conceive of the truth, because the truth would mean that President Wilson knew all along that he was breaking the law, that he was violating neutrality. And you see, the alternative to the truth is it's just unacceptable. And so what we do is we use the power of suggestion, that is the denial. And then remember, Adolf Hitler said, if you tell a lie over and over and over, ultimately people will believe it. And the bigger the lie, the more people will believe it. Actually, that came from a pope back in the Middle Ages, and Hitler picked up on the pope's observation when the pope said, give me a child till he's 7, he'll be a Catholic for life. All right, so what this is then the propaganda wars in reality is a battle for the minds of people who have the capacity to make choices. So in order to make our lie believable, we have to have a cover story. Because, after all, we have to be prepared for the eventuality that, well, maybe the Russians will shoot the airplane down. So we have to be the first guys out there. And the first thing we'll do is say, this is a heinous act of barbaric proportions, which no civilized nation would engage in. Well, excuse me, would civilized nations engage in putting their citizens at risk by sending them in an airplane 365 miles off course to take pictures of Soviet bases. And notice that this airliner, you know, it doesn't go from airbase to airbase, you know, and take pictures. It's just one airliner strays off course and just happens to cross one, takes pictures of it, and lands. Then, you know, 2 or 3 months later, a second airliner goes up, and, oh, gee, we're sorry as hell. Well, you know, it is possible that one airliner could get off course, but not six airliners over a period of 18 months. That isn't going to happen. And the other side isn't stupid, and they know that. They know that the South Koreans can navigate an airplane from here to there without straying out over their real estate. And yeah, sure, you know, it might happen. But I told you the other day, I said, you know, I'm just a little rinky-dink pilot flying little airplanes. And I can, you know, as dumb as I am, I can stay within 365 miles, of course, for crying out loud. And those big airliners, I mean, those guys, they've got the most sophisticated radio, electronic, and celestial navigation tools that's available to anybody. I mean, the first people that get these new tools are the airlines. Well, the military first and then the airline second. And you know, this is 1983. I mean, we're not talking about 1926, you know, when we're trying to fly an airplane, you know, across the Atlantic and find France, for crying out loud. This is 1983. I mean, we got jet airplanes. Been flying all over the world for a long time. No, that's the cover story. Now, the cover story works for the vast majority of people because the vast majority of people don't fly airplanes. So what in the hell would you know about navigation? And what would you know about spying? And so we believe what we read in the papers. Now, what we need to do is to control the media. Now, this is where government and the media come together. So we're looking at the book called Warriors of Disinformation, written by Alvin A. Snyder. Now, remember, Snyder is an insider with the United States Information Agency. It's our official propaganda tool, spin tool. It's the agency that lies to us, and we love it. But they lie to us so that the lies they tell us have to look better than the truth. See? Because the truth is unbelievable. All right, now listen up. The widespread erosion of support for NATO and the alliance with the United States had posed a very serious challenge to American foreign policy. Our task force received special reports on foreign media reaction from more than 200 USIA overseas locations to gauge how the Korean Airlines 007 story was being played out. So we looked hard at the stories coming from Western Europe, and it made for very satisfying reading. Coverage of Secretary of State Schultz's press conference, in which he condemned the Soviets for knowingly shooting down an unarmed passenger plane, was extensive, and there was widespread editorial condemnation of the Soviet act and concern over what it might mean to East-West relations. El Tempo of Rome called the shooting a deliberate mass murder. West Germany's Frankfurt Allgemeine cautioned that there is no use talking peace if one doubts the basic peacefulness of others and resorts to shooting whenever an aircraft gets off course. Our task force kept up its steady drumbeat in Europe. The USIA office in Lisbon rushed a videotape to a United Nations Security Council session on KE-007 to the biennial convention of the European Airline Pilots Association being held there, and the tape was viewed by more than 17,000 airline pilot members. Our USIA officer in Madrid screened the videotape for NATO foreign ministers who were meeting in the Spanish capital. We directed our overseas public affairs officers to get American ambassadors and embassy spokespersons on television news and talk shows so that they could keep stirring things up. And Soviet ambassadors in these same Western European capitals, meanwhile, were summoned to foreign ministries to give a full accounting of the KE-007 downing. The Soviet embassy in Paris issued a statement lashing out at the United States for whipping up a hysterical anti-Soviet propaganda campaign. The statement continued, "What is concerned is a catastrophe of an aircraft, which furthermore twice violated the airspace of the Soviet Union. For 2 hours, the crew of the aircraft did not reply to insistent signals addressed to them in ways conforming to the Universal International Aerial Code. Now, the Soviet statement had its facts straight, but because it was released through the embassy in Paris, it had minimal impact. The Soviet information machine still seemed incapable of getting its version of the story out in a dramatic, coherent way. So WIC also came under attack, a sure sign of Soviet desperation. And these attacks were nothing new. In fact, WIC was attacked so frequently by the Soviets that his staff prepared a weekly summary of the Soviet press assaults on him. And the Soviet press had recently accused him of operating a brothel before coming to Washington. Actually, he owned nursing homes. And of being the maestro of false propaganda, lies, and demagogy, hypocrisy, and instigation in running the United States government's foreign information program. The Soviets would later admit that they hated WIC because he did a lot of things that made them feel miserable. And the KE-007 event was not making them feel any better, particularly when within a few days he would employ his big ticket item, television. So by late Friday afternoon, we noticed Izvestia correspondent Alexander Shelnev. Every single Russian diplomat in Washington had disappeared from public view. And he was told that Russian security officers had issued a special warning advising diplomats to stay inside the embassy compound. Diplomats should not appear on the streets of Washington, and the warning read, because anti-Soviet feeling ran so high that it wasn't safe. All right, now the Americans now, through our information agency, now have the upper hand in the propaganda war in making people believe that, hey, this is just a freak accident. All right, now let's be intelligent people. How many Korean airliners have been shot down by the Soviets since 1983? Answer, none. Question. Does that mean that the navigational skills of the Korean Airlines navigators has now been corrected and they can now keep their airplanes out of Soviet airspace? Answer, yes, it has. Question, does that mean that we have stopped using Korean airliners for our spying operations over Soviet territory? Answer, yes, it has. I mean, come on, kids. You don't have to be real smart to figure this out. If, as a matter of plain fact, airliners stray off course from time to time, well then how often is this time to time that they stray off course? Is it once out of every 100 flights? Is it once out of every 1,000 flights? Is it once out of every 50 flights? How common is this? Is this the only time that the Korean airliner ever strayed off course? Not at all. The Soviets over the years said, hell, that was going on, you know, from time to time, fairly routinely. And so the Soviets had to take some kind of decisive action. After all, you got to hand it to the Americans. Teaming up with the South Koreans to equip a passenger airliner with photography equipment, you know, is a real coup. You know, that's really smart, because the other side doesn't dare shoot it down. Well, until it gets so far out of hand that, you know, the other side says, well, you know, we got no choice. We got to stop this. And so even though we're going to get a black eye for doing it, you know, we got to shoot it down. Now, we know that the Americans are lying in the stories that we've read so far, because as you read further through this chapter 4, 10 years after the fact, the Soviets give us the black box. The Soviets, you know, they've got all the facts together. They've got the wreckage. But you see, now, 10 years later, it's a dead letter issue, isn't it? And furthermore, the history has already been written. There is no way in hell that anybody in the world is ever going to believe that that 007 Korean airliner was outfitted with cameras for spying operations. The only people that know that now are the Soviets. They're the ones that dug it up. They've got the evidence. They got the equipment. They got the dope. But you see, our propaganda was so good that we now believe it. Just like you believe that Jesus is the King of Peace with long hair, and that he came to bring peace on earth. And that's because you believe it because you've been told that over and over and over again. It's part of history. I mean, you know that. You know Jesus has long hair. That's just the way it is. And it doesn't make any difference what you read in the Bible. You're never going to change your belief. In your mind, when you picture Jesus, you got this long-haired, effeminate-looking guy that looks like he's a pacifist. And that's your picture of Jesus. And you're going to die with it, just like the two court reporters are going to die believing there was blood everywhere. And that's the power of persuasion. The lie actually is more believable than the truth. And that's what makes propaganda and propaganda wars so effective. And this is why in Revelation 12:9, God tells us, he says, the whole world has been deceived, and that includes you and me and President Bush and everybody else in the world. And we're deceived not all the time. I mean, you know, sometimes we have some truth, no doubt about it. But the truth we have then becomes mixed with error. And then we come to a conclusion, and the conclusion is erroneous because some of the facts that we put into this question, this answer, is erroneous. Let me give you an illustration. Listen. Listen to these words. George Washington, the first president of the United States of America, threw a silver dollar across the Potomac River. True or false? First of all, no human being could throw a silver dollar across the Potomac River. Well, at least not down at Washington, D.C. Now, it is true that George Washington was our first president of the United States. It is not true that George Washington threw a silver dollar across the Potomac River. Now, you've heard that story, and you probably are sitting there saying, well, we know that the silver dollar portion of it isn't true. We do know that George Washington is our first president. And so we've got truth and error mixed together. Let's try it another way. George Washington, the third president of the United States, while president of the United States, threw a silver dollar across the Potomac River. True or false? The answer is false. And that's because George Washington, who was president of the United States, was not the third president of the United States, and he did not throw the silver dollar across the Potomac River when he was president. That was alleged to have occurred when he was a youth. All right, so truth plus truth equals truth. Error plus error equals error. Truth plus error also equals error. It's more likely statistically that you're going to be wrong and believe a lie than you're going to be correct and believe the truth. Now that's where reality is. And that's what the propaganda wars are all about. Deception. And the guy that we're trying to deceive is you. All right, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, if you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements are recommendations that we give. Do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're taking a look here at the propaganda wars, the psychological operations that government uses, not just our government now. Your government in Australia uses it against you Australians, and the government in Canada uses it against you Canadians, and the government in Great Britain and France and Germany and Russia and China. They're all using this to keep their citizens in the dark concerning the operations that their governments are engaged in, like, you know, false flag operations. Because, you see, if our government was responsible for the destruction of the Twin Towers, and if the American people knew and understood that, they would just be livid. Why, they'd vote the Republicans out of office, which is what they're going to do anyway. Now, it isn't going to change anything because, see, the Democrats are also in on these false flag operations. I mean, this isn't done by one party and not the other. Both parties in this country are controlled by the Committee of 300. And so, to a great extent, what goes on here is orchestrated at the highest levels. It's orchestrated in England. It's orchestrated in Russia. It's orchestrated here in the United States. But the governments have to keep that away from their people. So the Russians have to keep this away from the Russian people. They can't let the Russian people know that we're out here shooting down airliners. So they want to keep that away from them. But over on this side of the ocean, their propaganda operation says, well, we want the Americans to know that the Americans are violating neutrality by flying these commercial airliners over our bases, over our real estate, and taking pictures. Now, when we were doing this with U-2 planes, see, we could get away with it because the Russians didn't have the technology to shoot it down yet. Then one day they got a rocket that they could fire up there and shoot down the U-2 plane. Well, and that kind of knocked that one in the head, didn't it? All right, now, our government always denied that we would fly an airplane over somebody else's territory, but as long as we could do it, you know, we did it. All right, now, you remember that airplane called the SR-71? The SR-71. That thing was developed in 1968, and it took the place of the U-2. See, the U-2 was a lighter airplane, smaller. It could get way, way up there. And the Russians couldn't shoot it down because the airplane was too high. And they could take pictures. All right. Now, we're not supposed to be doing things like that. But, you know, that's the nature of the game. And Americans had to be kept in the dark. You can't be running around telling Americans, otherwise it would make a big political scene. But after the airplane got shot down, President Eisenhower denied it, and then pretty soon we couldn't deny it. And that's what happened with the Russians here with 007. They shot it down, and then they denied it, and then pretty soon they couldn't deny it, and then so, well, it was a spy plane, well, so, okay, and so back and forth, one side wins a propaganda victory over the other. In the case of the U-2, the Russians won the propaganda victory. In the case of 007, they lost. Now watch this. This SR-71, the thing would fly about 2,000 miles an hour. And here's what made it such an effective spying tool. They could take off from Japan, fly it all the way across the Soviet Union, and land the thing in Great Britain or someplace else. And you couldn't shoot it down because the rockets that they were firing were slower than the airplane. So you could fire a rocket at this thing and it could outrun the rocket. Isn't that just special? I mean, it was so supersonic. Now, to this day, it is a top secret. Now, it became obsolete back in the 1990s because the satellites became as good as or better than the SR-71. Now, notice that the SR-71 wasn't used for bombing. It was, nobody knows what it was used for. I know. I know what it's used for. It's used for spying. And it was a great asset or a great tool that the Americans used. Now the Russians know, no doubt, they've got their spy satellites up there, just like we've got our spy satellites up there. And now they're up there so high, the next step in the propaganda wars is going to be when a hot war takes place, you know, World War III, nuclear bomb war comes, when that comes, they'll be shooting those satellites down like popcorn. And right now, the United States just shot one down the other day. The Chinese shot one down a little earlier. See, we're just getting to the point now where we're getting the technology together. We can shoot these satellites down. Well, that's going to be very important. You don't want your enemy to have a satellite up there shooting pictures of what you're doing, and you don't have a satellite up there shooting pictures of what they're doing, because that would give them an advantage over you. So that you've got to have a technology whereby you can shoot them down. And so that's what we do. Now, the audio tape arrived at the State Department late Saturday afternoon, and Eagleburger and Ambassador Roger Kirk, representing UN Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick, who was vacationing. Even though the tape was larded with static, Russian language voices themselves would have solid impact. So Kirk told Eagleburger, this is information we can use, and we should put it out. And Kirk called Wick to tell him that the tape had arrived and that National Security Agency had checked the translation. So the United States goes into the United Nations, and now we've got the audio tapes of the Russian pilots who are actually talking. And we didn't want them to know that we were able to do that, and so we had to give up this technological spying advantage in order to use this propaganda advantage. And so, you know, the official powers that be in Washington say, well, do we want to let the Russians know that we're listening into their conversations? No, we don't. Would we like to use these conversations in the United Nations to cover up the fact that we've got this spy plane and they shot it down? And fortunately, the spy plane is in the ocean. Now, remember, the Russians said that they flew up alongside of it, fired tracer bullets alongside of it, tried to make radio contact with it, and said, land the airplane. Now, if this airplane had followed instructions, it would have been led to an airport, and they would have landed the airplane. And then the Russians would have gone over the airplane, investigated it, just like they did the American spy plane that landed on Hannan Island in South China, which was a great propaganda coup for the Chinese. They actually captured a spy plane. Then they went in and they investigated it and took a good look at it and it took it all apart and found out all of our secrets. Now, in order to prevent the Russians from getting hold of this airliner, which is going to spill the beans, the airliner pretends like they don't see the Russian plane flying alongside of it, and they pretend like, we can't make radio contact with it. Now, come on, kids. The airliner's 365 miles off course, flying over Soviet air bases, and then a Russian plane flies up alongside of it, fires tracer bullets, and then the Russians come out and they say, hey, it didn't have any navigation lights on. Oh my goodness. Now, see, the Americans now have the voice recordings. Now, come on. These Korean pilots are fully aware by now, you know, that their airplane is being stalked by. Don't you suppose that somebody in the Korean airliner must have said, gee, maybe we should take a look at our location. How come these Russian planes are flying alongside of us? Now, you know, when you get caught flying over somebody else's ground, you know, there are international channels that we make contact with people with. You know, if I was flying my airplane, I would fly my airplane and here comes an airliner. I mean, here comes a jet airplane alongside, maybe a fighter plane. And he'd slow down. And I remember one time I was flying too close to Travis Air Force Base and a B-52 flew right up alongside of me. I mean, I looked over and it just dumbfounded me, and the pilot and the co-pilot, I could see both of them in the cabin of the B-52. You can rest assured that the crew of the airliner, they could look right over there and see the pilot in the fighter plane, who was more than likely motioning them with a finger down, you know, start landing, partner. Now, these guys can't land. If they land, the jig is up. They're going to find the spying equipment, and it'll be a coup for the Russians. So we got to pretend like, gee, our radio doesn't work. Excuse me? You're flying a 747, and the navigation equipment doesn't work. Your running lights don't work, and now your radio doesn't work. Huh? I mean, come on, children. Let's wake up and smell the coffee. So the Koreans flying the airplane, who are probably CIA agents, they've got to fly this airplane out over the water. So they ignore the Russians, and they fly the airplane out over the water. If they shoot us down, we got to have this airplane buried so deep into the ocean the Russians can never dig it out. You can rest assured that that was their instructions. Now listen to this. You know, when American pilots are flying U-2s, do you know that they have poison with them? And if they get shot down, they're supposed to take the poison and kill themselves so that the other side can't torture them and get classified information out of them. Well, Gary Powers didn't do that. You know, it isn't the law that if you don't, you know, kill yourself, you know, we're going to think you're a bad guy. But, you know, here's the pill, and it'll be better for you so that you don't have to go through this torture. And we're going to give you this cyanide pill. Now, every once in a while, one side or the other scores a propaganda coup. And this is a propaganda coup for the Americans. Now, the point that we're making here in the broadcast is to show you that, hey, listen, your government lies to you. And your church lies to you. Your preacher lies to you. Now, as I speak, the president last night was on TV and he said, yeah, no doubt, there's an economic slowdown. But we're not in recession. And I don't believe we're going to go into recession. All right. Boys and girls, the United States has been in recession for 2 years. In fact, if you want to know, we went into recession in 2000, and we have not been out of recession from that day to this. It's just a matter of, well, how do you use the numbers? And so it's a part of the propaganda war. You're in recession, but you people don't believe you're in recession. And so this is where the bubbles come in. This is where we have M3. Now notice that they stopped publishing M3. You see, if we publish M3, then we're telling you how much money we're pumping into the economy. Now we can calculate M3 from M1 and M2, but it takes us to do it. It used to be that the Federal Reserve did it for us, and so now they stopped doing that. All right, now we got to calculate it ourselves. Here's the inflation rate. Boys and girls, it's been running 9, 10, 11, and in 2008 it's going up to 15%. And the inflation doesn't come into the picture until about 18 to 36 months after we print the money and put it into circulation. The 15% inflation that's being created in 2008 won't be here until 2011. So we don't have to worry about that. But meanwhile, the money is stimulating the economy today, which is the short-term effect that we want. All right, so we needed to stimulate the economy, so we did. But here's what happens to the purchasing power of your money. From 2000 to 2007, you lost 30% of the purchasing power of your money. 30% in 7 years. That is mind-boggling. And the loss of the purchasing power of our money from 1980 to 2000 was 50%. So over 20 years, we lost 50%, but over 7 years, we lost 30%. They're expanding. They're increasing the money supply to keep the illusion that the economy is growing. And I pointed this out the other day. Let's do it once more. Yes, the gross domestic product is growing at the rate of 4% a year. That's the truth. Now, how did we calculate the 4% growth? Well, we calculate it by the total amount of sales made in the American economy. All right. Does that include production? Answer, no. Does that measure sales? Yes. So how do we get 4% increase in the gross domestic product? Very easy. What you do is you inflate your money supply. As the prices go up, we don't produce more automobiles, but the price of the car goes up. Prices go up 4% a year, but production doesn't go up 4% a year. Production of real goods and services may actually be going down, but the prices are going up, and since that's the way we measure gross domestic product, the economy is growing 4% a year, and those are the official statistics that come from the Department of Labor. So what they do is they use propaganda to delude us into believing that the economy is growing, everything's fine. Go out and spend your money, have a good time. Take that Carnival cruise. Whereas if you actually knew the truth that the economy was contracting, you probably wouldn't take the Carnival cruise, which would exacerbate the recessionary effects. Now that's what the bottom line to the whole story is. It's a matter of your perception. What do you believe? And then based upon what you believe, then how do you act? How do you behave? And that's what these propaganda wars are all about. That's what this whole program is doing. So we're being deceived by our churches and our clergy. We're deceived by our economists and the Department of Labor. We're deceived by our military. We're deceived by our news media. And so God wraps it all up in one statement. He said, the whole world is deceived. Now, you're deceived in nearly every aspect of life, but that doesn't mean that you don't have any truth. You've got lots of truth available to you, and you believe a lot of truth. You know, nobody is totally deceived in believing all lies. You know, you can look up, you know, and you can see the sky's blue. And that's true. It's actually kind of a deception that the sky really isn't blue, but that's another story for another day. But, you know, from your perspective or your perceptions, you know, your senses, you know, tell you what's going on around you. And you can see that, and you can hear it, you can taste it, touch it, and feel it. But that doesn't mean that you're not deceived. But you believe that you've got the truth and that nobody can deceive you. And that's kind of built into our way of perceiving the world around us. When I say to you, you've been deceived, immediately you say, oh no, Gordon, you can be deceived, but not me. I'm old Joe. You know, an old Joe, I'm too smart for that. That's what I said. See, you know, you could be deceived, partner, but not George. Little Georgie is too smart for that. And that's what really makes deception work so well. Let's take another quick one over here. You know, you've heard this story about the mark of the beast. So if you were to ask a Christian, well, Christian, would you like to have the mark of the beast? He would say, oh, no, no, that's bad. Now, if you said to the Christian, you're asking the question, well, what is the mark of the beast? And you'll come up with as many ideas as there are people to give them. You know, well, I think it's Sunday keeping. I think it's Social Security. I think it's national identification cards. I think it's the Pope. I think it, you know, I got all these ideas. Now, are you going to take the mark of the beast? Well, according to Bible prophecy, everybody's going to take the mark of the beast except the elect. There's a small group of people that are going to avoid it. They're going to get away from it. They're going to stay away from it. Everybody else is going to line up to get it. And I think it's becoming more and more obvious that this mark of the beast is going to be something that goes in your right hand and in your forehead. And what are they telling you? They want to put in your right hand. Or insert into your body. It's this little grain of rice. It's going to have your chip. Now, what information is going to be on this chip? Well, I saw one the other day, saw a story the other day that said this little grain, it's a transmitter, it's a chip. And your body electricity is going to be the power base to it, and in order to activate it, they'll simply put the scanner over the top of your hand, and they can read all of the information that's on this chip. This chip is so small, it'll contain all of your medical records, all of your school records, all of your political records, Social Security records, income tax records, all of your now the government maintains 15 files on every American. This chip is so small, so technologically advanced, it'll hold all of your information on this chip. Isn't that just special? Now, they got to get all you Christians out there to line up and take this chip. And so what they'll do is they'll tell you that it's something else, and you people are going to really desire it. And so they're going to bring an economic collapse. And in the economic collapse, they're going to take your house and your car and your job. And then about the time they're ready to take your house, your car, and your job, they're going to say, but we've got a solution to the problem. You come down and you take this identifier, and then we'll roll over your notes and we won't take your stuff away, and you'll rationalize that and say, well, Jesus understands our dilemma that we have to do this, but Jesus loves us because he's the King of Peace and he's got long hair, and he came here to bring peace to planet Earth. And all of those lies, all of that propaganda, will come to fruition in you personally, and you'll line up to get your mark. You people will stand in line for hours to receive your mark so that you can avoid the consequences of not having it. And then rationalize it away and say, well, you know, everybody else is doing it. Everybody else believes it. Everybody else is getting their chip. And then the religious guys will come in and say, Jesus wants you to get your chip. Jesus wants you to obey the civil authorities. Jesus, if he were here today, would line up to get his chip. And so will you. Hey, I'm about out of time here, kids. I'm going to have to wrap it up here and remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Remember that the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.